This is Rocky Mountain Voices. You're listening to the vSpring V100 show, powered by PodTech.
What's difficult for most startups is to make the adjustment to add the necessary operational and organizational infrastructure to grow quickly, to be able to add dozens, in fact, hundreds of employees of the same quality, with the same training, same understanding of the market as those first dozen employees that started off perhaps in a garage.
Welcome to the V100 show. My name is Dennis Wood. The V100 is a group of community-nominated and peer-selected entrepreneurs who have been voted most likely to experience successful venture returns in the next 5 to 7 years. I'm here today with Grant Beckman. Grant, how are you today?
Very good. Thank you, Dennis.
Good, good. Thank you for being here. Grant, would you just take a moment to tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background and what you're doing right now?
Great. Well, I first graduated from Brigham Young University nearly 20 years ago. Great foundation there for just what's been a terrific career. From BYU, I went on to join my largest company, which only lasted for a couple of years. That was Boeing, working on some very terrific products up there, namely the B-2 or the stealth bomber as we know it today.
What did you work on with the B-2?
It was actually the avionics, so the systems designed for maintaining the flight control and mm-hmm. of the aircraft.
$2 billion plane.
And just a terrific engineering project. The taxpayers probably didn't like that too much, but for all the engineers involved on such a massive project with very innovative and new technology, it was a great learning ground for me starting my career. Ever since Boeing, though, I've gone through or had the opportunity to participate in a series of just great Utah startups that have gone on to be successful, in some cases going public, in other cases selling to larger enterprises, and some are still in the process of growing.
Great, great. Tell us a little bit about your current company and what you're doing right now.
I'm with this just terrific company named WiLife. That's spelled W-I-L-I-F-E, kind of like wireless life. And we've chosen to enter a domain that perhaps hasn't had any innovation for the last 20 years, and that's security for both residential and small businesses. We're bringing the 21st century digital technology, IP technology, to the solution of how do I protect my house, my property, my family, my business. Our video surveillance products are, in fact, today carried by retailers online, everything from Amazon.com and Walmart to Radio Shack, bringing innovation or actually opening up personal security to a whole new part of the market. Formerly, of course, video security would have been limited to airports and very large government buildings and so forth. But now anyone today with WiLife can have video security at their home or small business.
So, Grant, let me take you back. After Boeing, your background, where did you go after that?
The first startup I actually joined was a Utah company named Folio Corporation, working on great indexing and search technology. For the day, it was very amazing to be able to index gigabytes, in fact, terabytes of data on what at the time was an 8088 Intel processor running DOS, probably 3.1.
286 machines.
286 machines were a great step up. They were a beautiful advance in technology and amazing technology that allowed anyone, primarily enterprises, to index huge volumes of content and be able to search that content very quickly and easily. It went on to be the basis for many applications in the legal industry, support, services, insurance. And in fact, the technology lives on today in a company named Fast Search and Retrieval.
And from Folio?
From Folio went on to join probably what was my most interesting startup to date, which was Tenfold Corporation, a fast-growing, stellar company. When I joined, probably about the 10th or 12th employee, opened up the Salt Lake office. And in a matter of 3 years, we went from a dozen employees to 800 employees, public with a market cap in the billions of dollars. And I probably learned more working for Tenfold than I did for any other startup, working with and recruiting just great people to build that company.
I can imagine Tenfold had an incredible run rate. It was one of these companies that everyone knew about. What was your role at Tenfold?
I actually started at Tenfold as a VP of engineering, working or managing one of their software development groups. At the time, our architecture was that we had four engineering groups, two in San Francisco, two in Utah, each with their VPs, working on a very difficult problem, which was, or actually continues to be, How do you reduce the very high cost of building complex enterprise applications? And is it possible, which it turned out to be, to eliminate the need for lots of programmers and software and quality assurance people in developing complex applications for insurance, healthcare, and you can just about name any vertical market. The simple story was creating an application where you could simply describe the product that you wanted in terms of the type of application, the fields, the transactions, and let the computer generate behind the scenes all the code, the database, the security necessary to run and build those applications without ever having a programmer.
Tenfold had a dramatic ramp-up rate. You described it. You went from a dozen people to, I don't know how many, you said several hundred people. From an operational standpoint, you've had an opportunity, and I think also in Folio as well, had an incredible ramp-up rate as well, to watch an organization go from few to many in a very short span of time. What are some of the challenges organizationally in ramping up a company like that at such a fast pace?
For the small startup company, it's very important to be nimble and be able to adjust quickly to changing market conditions, particularly in those first few months and years, perhaps, when you're defining your market. What's difficult for most startups, particularly early stage startups, is to make the adjustment to add the necessary operational and organizational infrastructure to grow quickly, to be able to add dozens, in fact, hundreds of employees of the same quality, with the same training, same understanding of the market as those first dozen employees that started off perhaps in a garage. Some important elements that I've learned over time that are critical to being able to take a startup and grow it quickly. And the first is hiring great people. If you can't hire great people in a startup company, it's better not to hire at all, because you'll spend most of your time trying to adjust for the lower capabilities and understanding and knowledge of perhaps less capable employees.
Tenfold especially did an amazing job of that. And what was fascinating about the company is that they had so many folks from out of state. They were so successful at attracting world-class talent from the rest of the world.
In fact, Utah's a great place, of course, to come, to raise a family, to build out a career. So in fact, the Utah economy, the culture here, was a terrific draw in being able to attract the brightest people. The other element that's, of course, very important is being able to describe to a brand new graduate from Stanford University or Harvard or MIT the opportunity within your company, the fact that they'll be working with other great people working on a very difficult problem that, in fact, could be worth quite a bit of money in the market, and, of course, to themselves personally. If you can mix those things, a great culture, a great environment to attract people with a terrific company, you can recruit from just about anywhere in the world to Utah.
Yeah. And Tenfold certainly did a fantastic job of that. From a IT development process or from a software development standpoint, going from five people to 200 people. I mean, managing a team of 5 or 12 is just simply not the same as managing a couple of hundred folks. What are the challenges that we face here in the state or that startups face as they go from 5 developers to build a product to, you know, maybe 100 developers to build a robust solution?
Great question. Of course, the first one is the one I already mentioned, which is you must hire terrific people, whether they're the best of the local college or university or perhaps a nationally recognized university, or the 30-year veteran who perhaps has started 3 or 4 other companies themselves. You've got to hire the best people. Probably the most difficult problem in expanding your engineering team specifically from 5 to perhaps dozens and then hundreds is in the early stages of a startup, the communication to the employees about the mission of the company, who the customer is, why we're building the product we're building is very easy because everyone's involved in those early days. They understand. But as the company starts to grow, it's very easy to have that culture and understanding and knowledge diluted. It can be diluted by former trends and interests of the new employees. And the key for the executive staff, starting with the CEO perhaps, and of course moving on down through the organization, is to keep the understanding of the culture very clear, to make sure that everyone in the company understands who the customer is, why we're in business, and how we're going to make a difference in the world. More specifically, in the organization and perhaps management of those engineering organizations, it comes down to execution. In the early days of a startup, everyone understands the goals and what the deliverables are. as the organization starts to grow, then you have to put more effort in actually communicating what's expected, when it's going to be delivered. And the key to that, of course, is having committed teams. That is, teams that are not only committed to the company, but also to the product and to the requirements that we're signing up for and the delivery dates. Building committed teams is more difficult as you create a larger organization.
Yeah. Do you think we do a good job of that here in the region? Do you think there are ways that we can improve? What are kind of your thoughts, regionally speaking?
It's interesting. In the Utah area, we're probably nationally recognized on an annual basis for the number of startup companies that we have, and we're very good at that. And we've got some very well-known national, perhaps Fortune 500 brands that, of course, also call Salt Lake and Utah home. You don't find a great tradition in Utah yet, and of course, we'll have to develop that with time, of being able to develop that middle stage company, the middle stage company that can grow from 10 million to 200 million, but then compete against the billion-dollar companies and continue to grow at that rate. As we can see around the state, traditionally, perhaps a company would get to 1 or 200 million and then need to sell out or to merge with a much larger company in order to keep competing. And I don't know that's necessary. It actually becomes, I think, just a new discipline that we need to develop in the state. How do you build billion-dollar companies?
Do you see it as largely an operational problem? Do you see other factors that influence that?
I think there are probably three elements. First is financial, and that is being able to develop a tradition and understanding in the state of how do you financially manage companies of that size. The second, of course, I'd add operations, being able to execute specifically and cleanly through your business, deliver what you need to be successful in the market, be able to compete on a daily basis. And then the last one, which of course is an area you'd be interested in, Dennis, is being able to recruit great people. The larger company gets, they must move their recruiting spectrum beyond the state, beyond the great universities here, and start recruiting both regionally and internationally in order to continue to feed the resource, human resource requirements for those large and growing companies.
Yeah. All right, now the tough questions. If you could select three mentors to spend some time with that maybe you haven't in the past, anyone that you could choose, who would they be?
Very good question. Perhaps a little trite and maybe overdone. Mine first one would be Bill Gates. Somewhat like myself, starting off as an engineer, writing software, then being able to build a billion-dollar company and do it in a terrific fashion. Of course, it's easy to call Microsoft the nemesis and dislike what the type of competition they create for so many industries. But just amazing what Microsoft was able to do, and to do it with the type of people and commitment that they started off with. I'd love to spend a day with Bill Gates, understand how did he make the transition from the company building DOS 2.0 with a few dozen great engineers to the company that today delivers terrific products like the Xbox and, of course, most recently Vista, and it just goes on down the list.
Certainly from a ramp-up standpoint, from an operational standpoint, they may represent the height of any kind of very steep ramp-up that a company may ever experience, that's for sure. Bill Gates is number one. Number two?
As number two, Larry Ellison.
Okay.
So Larry, kind of coming from a different background, still built a terrific company in Oracle.
Yeah.
Not being an engineer himself, but being the founder, the visionary, the driver, of course, is building Oracle.
Yeah.
And, of course, two very big companies here, an example, Microsoft and Oracle.
Any non business leaders that you may think about?
So the third one I'd put on my list would be Mother Teresa. Of course, spending my entire life worrying about business and building companies, perhaps kind of a counter-example to what I've spent most of my time doing. But what a terrific example and woman to spend her life providing for and servicing those who had very little. In some ways, there are probably few business leaders who could compare with Mother Teresa on the impact that she had, the brand she was able to create,
yeah,
about what she was about and what she was doing, and at the same time be able to affect so many lives. Not through employment, which of course is necessary and important, but being able to provide a way for them to improve their standard of living and their life and their ability to expand their community and culture.
Yeah. All right, final question for Grant Beckman here from Wildlife. The question is, if you could do something else that you're not currently doing, something that you really enjoy, that you find fascinating, maybe not even technology related, but you could really kind of spend some time on, what would that be?
I'd love to be a university professor, but sadly, I don't know that I have the discipline to ever go back and get a PhD degree and qualify for that. But the fact of training and educating new, fresh minds who are interested in expanding their ability and their development, frankly, my fondest years were my years in college. The years at the foot of a professor who cared so much about my training or education. And someday I'd like to find a way to return that. So whether it's in the university setting or some other setting, being a mentor, being an educator, a teacher, would be great fun.
Grant, thank you for being here. This has been the V100 Show.
This has been a Rocky Mountain Voices podcast. Visit us on the internet at www.rockymountainvoices.com.